You're listening to Tarazi Tuesdays with The Bible as Literature.
Hi, this is Father Mark Boulos, and you are listening to Tarazi Tuesdays with The Bible as Literature podcast. The Bible, Father Paul explains, is a holy joke. That's a big relief, even hopeful. Looking around, I see that the current state of affairs is an unholy joke. Truly, if the scriptural God is not laughing at us, mocking us, and ultimately, as Father Paul explains, entrapping us, he is not God. He can't be. What kind of God, what monster would be happy with us? I mean, seriously, people, look at us. Do you think it sounds odd that God would say, "Here is a nice tree in the garden. Now don't eat of it." When you say to little children, "We love you. We do not want you to go hungry. So we will send you food, but we will not let you touch it. We will just talk about how much we care, because we are not violent like the God of the Old Testament." May this God, the vengeful and terrible God, found only in the text, the one everybody ignores and abuses, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, mock, shame, confound, judge, terrify, and entrap us without reprieve, for the sake of the poor, until his kingdom comes in power. I am delighted to introduce Father Paul on the Bible as Literature podcast, Tarazi Tuesdays.
The Bible is making fun of you, is pulling your leg. I launched the word entrapment, but you're going to hear it, and if I ever write another book, I'm going to say it. The Bible is the superlative divine entrapment. Okay? You have a nice tree here that I planted in the garden, and you may not eat of it. People say, "But that's a joke." Well, it's a holy joke. I agree it's a joke. But the difference, it comes out of the mouth. How are you going to explain this? Either to a child or to a colleague who loves philosophy. It's impossible. So you're entrapped already. I mean, take the way you hear the circumcision. Why is circumcision essential in Genesis 17? And then you dump it. How is that possible? And that is ultimately not as simplistic as you imagine, because unless you know the content of the books, you have to know.
I don't have a paid Bible software. I use Bible Hub. I don't know if that's good or not, but when I look at the Hebrew text, it gives you a couple different variations of the Hebrew text to look at. Is there one that's better than the other, or
variations in the texts or in the sequence of the canon?
Or like the manuscript, the Hebrew manuscript.
Yeah, it's a big debate because practically we were stuck with the so-called Masoretic text. That's where my criticism against the so-called NATO scholars, whether they like it or not, their Bible is the Masoretic text. And I'm saying it is silly And this is where the Orthodox hit at the Westerners. But the Masoretic text came about between the 7th and 10th century. The Septuagint, we have manuscripts from the 4th century. You see what I mean? But if you begin with the assumed instrumental text, I say assume, but I can prove to you that it did exist, because where did the Masoretes get their text that they vocalized? You may not show me a text, but it doesn't matter for my argument. Now, add to this fact that when you have the actual, our printed, the words are separated. Whereas take a Greek manuscript of the Septuagint or even the New Testament, you don't have a separation. You have a certain number of letters written off one line to keep control. This way, if you have it torn and so on, you can figure out how many letters are missing. But when you split the text, I mean, you read about it when you learn Hebrew in the text, that very often mistakes are made between the resh and the dalet that look alike and a scribe made. So we can get into details, but practically, mentally, it's the way the people, when they say canon, in their mind, they have the Septuagint canon. When they say Hebrew text, actually, they are not saying Hebrew text. They are saying the Masoretic text, which is already loaded. You cannot, for me, read Jeremiah before Isaiah, because there is something important in the sequence of the passages that speak about God's dictating to the prophet something for him to write. The first mention, and I mention it in my teaching, that the first case for a written document as Bible and teaching is in Isaiah chapter 8. Now, when you move to Jeremiah, this situation is moved directly at the beginning of the book, where God say to Jeremiah, shut up, I'm going to put my words in your mouth. And I like in my teaching, that's my twist, you don't have to endorse it as that, is that God realized with Isaiah that, you know, it would have been better if he started by telling him. He did that in Jeremiah. Then with Jeremiah, who kept complaining, my words, he learned his lesson. And with Ezekiel, he threw in his mouth and stomach a book already written, which is silly, but this is what you hear. Now add to this, that this book, the idea of a scroll, is prepared for at the end of Jeremiah, where he says the people of Jerusalem are done with, so he decided to write a letter to the exiles. So at the end of Jeremiah, you have already a pre-Ezekiel. That you won't hear except from me, that you are bound to hear scripture canonically in sequence. When you get to the New Testament, it becomes more frustrating, because everybody says, including me, that the first technically gospel is the Gospel of Mark, that was developed. But canonically, the first gospel is Matthew. another thorn in the flesh. I mean, why is it that two books where very clearly everybody speaks about Luke Acts? Why? Because you hear in my first word, O Theophilus, in my second word. But here comes my stress in the canon, that in the New Testament canon, there is a split between Luke and Acts, and between them you have the Gospel of John. Now, don't ask me why. That's a longer story, and obviously I have my take on it. But all I'm saying is that these things we have to be aware of. Not one gospel in four forms. Then you have Marcion. Why everybody condemned Marcion? I think Marcion presaged the Sunday school material. He should have an icon, if not in the church, in the Sunday school classes. Because this is the assumption. So there is only one Christ and so on. And you know how I make fun with the reference to the transfiguration. There was a transfiguration and three people said it. You don't know. I like our rubrics. May Paul Laser rest in peace. He used to say, I may not agree with everything Father Paul says, but I love the stress on the rubrics. Take, for instance, in our services. People were aware of these four gospels because in the services, you have a gospel. You hear in Matins, and another gospel about the same feast, you hear why. I'm telling you why. And then sometimes if you have something in the Vespers, the idea is that you have to hear the passages. And this is reflected also in the reading of epistles and so on. Paul says something about fasting, and you choose a text where Jesus says about fasting. Again, this is extra, but it's still along the same line that I wanted to stress today, the centrality of the canon as it stands.
Bible as Literature is a production of the Ephesus School Network.